Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Greta Anderson, here with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. Hello, Ursula.
Hello, Greta, and hello to you, the listener. Thank you for joining us.
Ursula and I and the rest of the Local Talk team have been busy preparing for tomorrow's live broadcast from Des Moines. We'll be covering a Democratic candidate forum organized by Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement.
Both Martin O'Malley and Bernie Sanders will be there taking questions from grassroots activists. Our broadcast starts at 1 p.m. O'Malley takes the stage at 2 and Bernie at 3.
And I believe we will be the only news outlet providing wall-to-wall coverage of this forum. It's going to be very exciting. So tune in this Saturday at 1 p.m. You'll hear synopses of what national grassroots leaders are doing, and then at 2, the forum begins.
Yes, so join us on KHOI. It is our first national broadcast. We're broadcasting across the country through the Pacifica Radio Network, and this is our team's first attempt at this. So listen in and hear us cut our teeth or show up to the forum. A link to details is on our website about the forum.
But we're taking a welcome break from caucus politics on today's Local Talk show. Later in the show, I preview a positively trippy new exhibit at the Octagon Art Center.
And I will find out more about the Ames Figure Skating Club from Darlene Lewis, longtime figure skating and ice hockey coach.
But in the studio, we have a convergence that would be hard to replicate in any city, but I imagine New York City or Los Angeles. Hometown writers who have composed two completely different original musicals, both of which will be premiering here in Ames this month.
On the one hand, Clark Ford, a veteran creator of musicals, is putting on a musical entitled 2016, which will be performed at the end of January. Welcome, Clark. And what is this, your fifth musical?
No, thank you, Ursula. No, it's my sixth.
Sixth
and last in a series of musicals that span about six decades and are about sort of the issues faced by one family.
Okay. And representing the younger generation, Ben Salzberger and Robbie Crochelle, high school seniors who have created a musical entitled A Slice of Reggie. And this show will be premiering this weekend.
Yep.
Today, actually.
Yeah.
Today. And we'll give those details later. Welcome, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming in. Let's start with veteran Clark. You mentioned that your musical is about a family. And apparently the family members have vastly different approaches to social issues, like sexual orientation and abortion, and a situation that's actually common these days. So can you fill in the details? This is like a local Modern Family type of scenario.
It's like a six-decade soap opera, really, except we do really look at social issues. And this family, the way it's sort of evolved in the six shows, there are conservatives and there are liberals. There are people of different faith orientations. And so it kind of reflects our national polarity when it comes to politics and many other issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a slice of real life in a way. You're really following the times and what you see happening in reality. Is this last play a departure in any way from the other plays?
No. It sort of brings it to culmination. And, you know, I would say that it's the last because we finally arrived at the present. And I don't really care to speculate too far into the future.
Well, the poster shows I guess, ambiguously gendered individual. The show features or revolves around the story of a transgender youth.
Yes, that's correct. This character, by the way, is played by a trans man.
Oh.
And I'm trying to be careful about the terminology because this is a person who identifies as a male.
Okay. So it's almost like in Shakespeare's day where you have a man playing a girl playing a man, except now you have a – yes, okay, I gotcha. Say some more. This character's name is Reagan, right?
Yes. The character was born the biological son of a missionary family. And then that family tragically lost their lives, and so, or the parents did. So the child was adopted by another missionary family who then, you know, moved back to the States. And the mother in that family was very interested in politics and social issues, and so began to be involved in politics. And now in 2016 is running for a state senate in an unnamed state.
Okay. A state very much like our own? Or
it could be.
Okay.
Let me clarify this again. You said the character is played by a trans person.
Yes, yes,
are they
correct.
That in the play as well? Or
oh,
that?
Yes.
Okay.
Going in the other direction, born male and
becoming female.
Transitioning to female.
So yes. That transition is part of the story in the play.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. This character waits until they are 18 to sort of announce what has been a reality all their life, but they couldn't come out with that with their family.
And this is a shock to the missionary parents.
It certainly is. But there are other members of the family who are much more accepting.
Okay. Tell us about some of the other people in the family.
Well, the husband in the missionary family is related to the other characters. Of course, he's related to his wife, who's running for office. His sister is a liberal. He's conservative, but his sister is a liberal. And in fact, decades ago, they were both interested in the affections of a free-loving hippie who the husband did actually marry later, but has since divorced. And that character and the sister are together now and married.
Oh.
So we have a married lesbian couple versus, of course, the conservative couple and their unhappy trans child.
Well, there's got to be some happiness. The song that you have that we've picked for you to show off, because it's a really nice song, is quite an upbeat piece.
It is. Oh, I have to say, the music is very interesting. It's varied. I really love the music. And this piece that you're speaking of is a very happy piece. It's the happy place where the transgender character goes and is sung to the character's girlfriend.
Who wrote the music?
Oh, I wrote it all. The music and the lyrics and the book. So we have music to fit these different characters. And so there's a kind of a wide variety of musical styles, from rock to pop to sacred. Etc.
So, well,
I even sing rap.
Oh, that's right. There's a political rap in there. Let's go to this transgender character's happy place.
I've been thinking about you, and it's making me smile. I am falling in love with you. I've known it for a while. Because you make me happy just thinking about you. Yeah, you make me happy. It's hard being without you.
And that was a song from Clark Ford's new musical entitled 2016, The Musical One Family, which will be performed later this month. You're listening to Local Talk. Clark, that song is so upbeat. And the person singing it is a professional musician.
Yeah, this was a professional recording. So I sent the song actually to a Nashville studio, and this is what came out. So it'll sound good on stage. It won't sound exactly like this.
Okay. And is there a happy resolution to the drama, or do we have to come to the show to find out?
Well, there is conflict, but there needs to be a resolution within this family, and
right.
So that is what is the theme of the last act, the last scene, is a sort of a family healing session, and many of these issues are moved forward in terms of resolution.
Clark, are these characters based on people that you know?
Not really. They're characters that have sort of evolved.
Over the years?
Over mm-hmm. the years. In,
is
in
this hard
shows.
To let them go?
Yes. Thank you for asking. It is. You know, one of the characters is not on stage that had to be let go because the character advanced in age and had Alzheimer's and by, you know, 2016 mm-hmm. is no longer living. And that but that character is remembered mm-hmm. in the show. And so for me and for, you know, some of the actors who have worked with this whole series, these characters are very important.
So how long have you lived with these characters?
For 6 years.
And you've pretty much thought about them throughout that whole time, right?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, let's turn to the youngsters now, Ben Salzberger and Robbie Crochelle. You are the creators of a full-stage musical, original full-stage musical called A Slice of Reggie, mm-hmm. which will yes. be premiered this weekend at a Black Box Theater.
Yeah, that's correct. Out at 615 South Dayton. And yeah, so Black Box Theater is essentially just a big room that's black. So it sort of allows any kind of configuration. As far as the stage, as far as the seating. So, yeah, I'm very excited to be there.
Okay, so you go down to Dayton on
yeah.
Lincoln Way and turn right.
That is correct.
Okay.
And then it'll be very clearly marked.
Okay.
We'll make sure you can find it.
Yeah, don't worry.
And what's the story behind your musical?
Well.
So the story essentially follows Reggie Latowski, who is a college student. He's a history major entering his last year, and he has just had his girlfriend dump him. So he's been a bit depressed in the past. He's had a little bit of a history there that he hasn't really dealt with, and this sort of just pushes him over the edge. So his best friend is, in fact, a little bit of a pothead, and thinks that what Reggie needs to, you know, like calm down is to take drugs. And Reggie is a very straight-laced kind of guy, and he's very hesitant to do that. But actually, a lot of the musical does happen within a trip of Reggie's, and he is basically visited by, in the first act, four presidents of the United States, as well as Hitler and John Wilkes Booth. At one point.
Wow.
Yeah. So
hallucinogens kind of open the door.
For Reggie. Yeah.
It allowed us
to do
pretty much anything we wanted to.
Yeah. It allows mm-hmm. us to embrace some of the absurdity of the ideas while still finding being very connected to a very realistic emotional heart of the show that Reggie has that we tap into a lot more in the second act. Second act, I feel like, is rooted a little bit more in reality in some ways.
It is. We switch back and forth a lot during the second act.
Yeah, between the real world and the drama that's sort of unfolding there and then back to Reggie as he sort of finally discovers himself and embraces himself fully. Yeah.
Wow. And tell me more about him. Why would he be visited by presidents? Is he very interested in politics?
Well, he's a history major with a focus on the history of the United States. So he just kind of connects these presidents with ideas that he has to move forward in his life.
And actually with his own professor, the first number in the song is called Voicemail. It's essentially Reggie listening to all these people who are either concerned with for him as he sort of like slips away from everything else, or are sort of pushing him into in different directions. And each of those end up getting represented by a different president. But all of the presidents are actually played by the same gentleman, Joseph Smith, who is also playing his own history professor. And actually, Joseph Smith is I know this is all about musicals and Ames. He is writing and producing his own musical that will be performed, I think, a little bit later on in the year. So
yeah
so lots of talent in Ames.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so about the songs, Ben, you are the writer of words, and Robbie, you are the writer of music.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in some way.
So how many songs are there?
16 in total. 16. I was counting on the way over here. I was like, they're going to ask me that. So
yeah.
So 9 songs in the first act and 7 songs in the second act. So yeah, we have 16 in total.
That's quite remarkable.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk about the process of composing together?
Okay. Well, we've had a little bit of experience with it before. We've tried working on other projects together. None of them have really worked out. But
we've tried. I mean, we've done films together before, but then we finally tried to do a concept album together that was based off of Shakespeare's Hamlet, and it did not work.
That was a mess.
At all. Yep, a little bit of a mess. So Robbie came back to me with an idea.
About a guy who falls in love with a pizza.
Basically, yeah.
And that and that kind of became
a slice of Reggie.
Exactly, gotcha. A starting point. So we were very lucky that Ames High School is very supportive of these kinds of independent projects. So the ELP program let us spend a semester basically one period a day. We would just work together
and hammer stuff out,
and hammer this all
out.
So yeah.
Okay. Well, let's listen to a song, and then we'll get Ursula and Clark into the conversation.
Awesome.
The greatest generation is getting really old, and the baby boomers shove their music down our throats. My grandfather fought in a valiant war against the Japs and the Huns. I'm just another millennial, incapable of helping anyone. I'm just another millennial, a guy with a laptop, self-absorbed in material. All my friends just wanna smoke pot. My father fought in a less valiant war against the Reds in Vietnam. I'm just another millennial, I don't think I could fight anyone.
All right. And that was a song from Another Millennial is the title of that song from the new musical, A Slice of Reggie, which is premiering tonight and will be playing all weekend at a Black Box Theater on South Dayton.
That's correct. Yes.
By Robbie Crischel and Ben Salzberger.
Who are the performers?
So it's a cast of 8, 4 principals and then 4 chorus members. So Joseph Smith, as we already mentioned, who's writing Holloway currently, writing and producing Holloway currently. Kyvan Kirk, a recent graduate of the ISU Performing Arts Program. Jill Smolik, who you may have seen in a number of actors' productions. And
this guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you go about finding these actors?
We had auditions. Kyvan actually, how we got Kyvan was because it is a full production, we obviously needed a budget to do that, to rent the space to, I mean, we have a full set designed by another friend of ours, Zoe Lazier, costumes. So that all required budget. So we actually had a Kickstarter campaign in early October that was successfully funded. And Kyvan graciously volunteered to play Reggie in that for our Kickstarter campaign for the little video that we wanted to produce for that.
And we were very happy with his performance.
Yeah.
So we were like,
"That's
want to do the whole thing."
He absolutely blew us away with that. So, yeah.
And Clark, who performs in your musical?
Well, we have David Michael, who is a veteran of local stage productions, Doris Nash, who sings with the Ames Choral Society and Good Company. Kitty Fisher also sings with the Ames Choral Society and Good Company. Carolyn Myers, Stephanie Imhoff, Jace DeWitt, and myself. So it's a cast of seven.
And is the cast brought together similarly? Did you have auditions, or how do you, or are these people that have worked over the years on these?
Some have worked over the years. I have had auditions in the past, but I was mm-hmm. able to fill these roles without an audition process. This is a it's a staged reading, so mm-hmm. our level of production is thankfully a lot less than what. Mm-hmm. people have to do to put a full production, a musical production.
So what I hear is not only does Ames have musicians and writers who produce musicals, Ames does provide actors and singers who will perform in musicals.
Very talented ones, yeah, definitely.
There's a lot of talent in this town. It's mm-hmm. wonderful.
And what else goes into the production of an independent musical like you have? You mm-hmm. have to find the musician. You both have pianos with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's actually Robbie will be performing all of the music live. He's actually on the stage with our actors.
I'm on a piece of scaffolding.
Yep.
Crowded with a guitar and a piano, like cramped mm-hmm. in there. And
do you have a set?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, as we said, Zoe Lazier designed the set, which, I mean, we're very grateful to have her. She's another high school senior, but she's taken actually classes up at ISU for set design. And I've worked mm-hmm. with her on Story Theater Company shows before, which is a children's theater in town. Teddy Clark has also been designing costumes for some time, and she is another senior in high school. You might be sensing a trend is sort of just getting the gang back together from some mm-hmm. of these teen productions that we've done for Story Theater Company. But they're both very, very talented. And, I mean, obviously she's created four presidents on stage mm-hmm. and from the same individual and, you know, Adolf Hitler and John Wilkes Booth. So, yeah, it's she's excellent. Yeah.
So why did you guys bring Adolf Hitler into this?
He's actually used as at the end, Reggie sort of starts to doubt himself. He's starting to make progress all throughout the first act. But then he's starting to lose a lot of faith. And so his own sort of demons are also represented by historical figures.
Yeah, we had I had a list of enemies of America.
Yeah.
And so we were just like crossing him off. Like, no, that one isn't he wouldn't have a funny song. This one wouldn't have a funny song.
Also, there's quite the rich history of having Hitler in musical theater.
Yeah.
Oh,
actually,
yeah. It's
been
springtime
a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's the one you could picture as funny?
I mean, honestly. I think that he's the one that we found easiest to make fun of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, he's also in the distant past, so I guess it's easier than some of the more recent tyrants.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we weren't. Yeah, going to go with that.
But like Ben said, there's not only a history of Hitler in musical theater. There's a history of Hitler being kind of funny in musical mm-hmm. theater.
Yeah.
But because you make a lot of fun of.
I think it's definitely one way that. You know, mm-hmm. we fight demons is through the form of musical theater and just sort of by making fun of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good transition to the discussion of the genre of musicals that you have chosen mm-hmm. to compose in, to create in, to invest your talent and time and energy in. What is it about musical? Let's start with you, Clark, that just draws you.
Why do you do it?
Yeah, music. Well, I would say that musicals are their own reward. I mean, it's possible that a locally written and produced musical will make it big, but the odds are kind of like winning the lottery. So if you're not really realistically thinking this show will be on Broadway, then it has to have meaning to
intrinsic
yourself.
Value.
Yeah, and they do. It's a wonderful way to express ideas, and bring them out.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, when we were kids, we always thought it was – I know that when I was a kid, I always thought it was just so hilarious to think that somebody would just break out into song about something, you know. And but it – I guess it's kind of fun in that way because you don't get to do that in real life.
Well, some people do. I do.
Yeah. How about you? Why do you do it?
For us, part of it was just if we were going to work together.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had a lot of history in theater, and Robbie's had a lot of history in music. So we've
always wanted to like just do something big together, and so we were like, let's finally get to it, and so we did.
But I think you definitely hit on something. It's definitely very rewarding in its own right, just because it is so big and so complicated. And sometimes I do think that it helps to say something in song or have someone's confession come in song. We actually, I mean, we're a bit self-referential sometimes in the play itself about it being a musical or him vaguely being aware of that fact, which we can do because of the structure that we've set up for ourselves.
Yeah. You know, in music, to me, musicals have always struck me that the music is the equivalent in a play to what a picture would be in a book, like an illustration.
Yeah. It's
kind of like a little time out where you look at the issue in a different genre and then you go back to the story, right?
Yeah.
When the emotion gets so high that there's no other way
except to
sing it.
Illustrate it, flesh it out. Yeah.
Well said.
In another medium. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's when you write it, do you think of it that way? Do you see the musical part as kind of being in a different world?
Not always. It sort of depends on the song, right?
And the way that we went about writing this musical, we actually laid out a list of songs before we even started writing the book.
Mm-hmm. I like to work from an outline when I'm writing out these musicals. So, I mean, the outline itself took long enough because we had to brainstorm together like what exactly this musical was going to be all about. So we knew that we were working towards these points in the musical, and obviously it changed and evolved hugely from that first outline. But we knew each scene was building towards oftentimes this climax, this climactic moment that is where, like Robbie said, the emotions just get so high that they just have to sing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
No, I totally agree. The songs are like a milepost. Mm-hmm. And in fact, for my shows, the songs are always written first. I know what the characters are doing, what they're thinking, and therefore what they're singing. And then, then the script comes next.
So do you experience the script as, in a sense, the transitions between the songs?
Oh, it's a lot more than that.
More than that.
Because the script has to carry, the plot and what's being
So it has its own life.
Oh, absolutely. It does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned a book.
Yeah.
Are you publishing the book?
We'll have to see. I mean, we'll apply for copyright. Will probably be the next step. We have to transcribe all of the music and make sure that we're on our final
because right now all the music is just in my head. It's nowhere else.
Yeah, all the piano. I mean, if Robbie died in a horrible car accident, then this whole musical would just be over.
Except for one song.
Knock wood.
There is one song that's down.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
I think book, that's kind of jargon in their world for the script. Right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's all – it's everything that isn't the songs, and even the songs sometimes, depending on your definition. But yeah, it's just the whole of the thing.
Well,
exactly. Book and lyrics.
Remind everybody who we're talking to and see if we can get some people out to your show this weekend. We've got A Slice of Reggie. Mm-hmm. It will be performed
At 7:30 p.m. on Friday and Saturday of this weekend, so January 8th and 9th, out at 615 South Dayton. The signs will be very obvious, I promise. And on Sunday the 10th, we'll be performing at 2 o'clock p.m., and the house will open a half hour before both of those performances.
Okay. And so go out and support these talented high school seniors and the various folks they've gotten together for their production. Clark, yours is later in the month.
It is. It's the last weekend of the month, the Friday night, the 29th, at 7:30, Saturday the same time at 7:30, and Sunday the same time at 2. But the venue is the Unity Church of Ames at 9th and Kellogg.
Oh, okay. So you've been working with them all throughout this process, correct?
Yeah, there's a nice little stage and even stage lighting now.
Okay.
That's nice venue, yeah.
All right. Well, we are going to turn to a song that is about Iowa and musicals and a favorite of everybody's. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you very much.
And that, of course, was 76 Trombones from the musical The Music Man, played by the U.S. Air Force Band. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio with your hosts for today, Greta Anderson and Ursula Rudenberg.
We've been joined by Darlene Lewis, who teaches ice skating. And we wanted to talk about the sport of ice skating at this time at the dead of winter. And we have been fortunate to have a little bit of nice winter weather, although looks like it's disappearing pretty quickly out there today. Darlene, you're a member of the Ames Figure Skating Club.
Yes.
And welcome to KHOI.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
Thank you so much for coming in. And tell us a little bit first, what is the Ames Figure Skating Club? Give us a little sense of who the club is.
Well, the club has been around for a very long time, and it's basically an organization that promotes figure skating. We have several figure skaters, of course, but the point is that they're learning all kinds of skills. They're learning some life lessons too. You know, this whole falling down, getting up, all of that. It's important.
Definitely part of skating.
So it's a celebration of ice sports.
Excellent. Is this a private club, like a nonprofit organization?
It is.
Okay.
Yes, we're actually a member of the U.S. Figure Skating Association. So we're part of a whole larger group, and it's the only path to the Olympics are these kinds of clubs around the country.
How long has Ames had a figure skating club?
That is a question I do not know the
answer
to.
Wow, so it's that long?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. And where do you practice?
We're over at the Ames ISU Ice Arena, and we practice every single day of the week.
Wow, so this is – and where is the ice arena for
– It is over just – north of ISU
off of on Gateway,
right off of Mortenson, Gateway Hills Parkway.
Okay. So the club is described as providing skaters of all ages and ability many opportunities to learn to skate, mm-hmm. or to take their skating to the higher level.
Yes.
Of skill and enjoyment.
Yes.
So I take that last statement as saying that you also are prepared to train professionals or Olympic skaters.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we've done that.
Tell us about that.
We have, well, in fact, we have one of our coaches that's there now, Abigail Teal. She actually skated at Nationals about 8 years ago, I think. And so she came out of Ames and then trained later in Indiana. We also have some skaters.
And what is Nationals?
Oh, Nationals. It is the United States Figure Skating National Competition that earns you the right into the Olympics if you place amongst the top two or the top three.
Okay.
So it's important. The way it's broken down, skaters go to regionals. If they pass that, they get to sectionals, then they go to nationals, and then to the Olympics. And, you know, we have several kids who are going to regionals now, and they're training hard for that.
So you have young people in Ames who actually would like to be in the Olympics?
Yes.
And see themselves on that level.
Isn't it every kid's dream who skates?
Well, it is.
To be in the Olympics?
It is the story, isn't it?
Yes.
The kid who gets up every morning at the crack of dawn to practice before they go to school.
Yes.
And how often do you have to actually practice if you want to skate on that level?
Well, probably about 20, 25 hours a week.
Okay.
We at our club, we have about 12 hours that we offer a week. We also have off-ice training along with that.
What is that?
So that's working on skills that are going to help you skate better on ice. So it's strength, agility, flexibility, jumps, all of those things that are going to help you be better on ice, make you stronger.
I think a lot of people see figure skating as kind of parallel to ballet.
Yes.
In a way. Is that a good analogy? I know it comes up a lot. Also, I guess because of the way you dress as well, but the fact that you have certain postures and certain forms that you
right.
hold when you skate.
I mean, it certainly has – it's a cousin to ballet, if you will. But I think what people are surprised about is the strength that it takes to actually do this sport. These skaters are athletes.
Yes.
So it would be – wrong to say that it's just this ballet endeavor that they're into. They're doing both aerobic and anaerobic things when they're on the ice. It's a tough sport, both physically and mentally.
But it's designed to look easy, to make hard
exactly.
things look easy.
Exactly.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I think ballet is kind of like that, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a very strong artistic component, an expressive component. And so I'm wondering about how that is developed through your club.
Right. Well, in our club, there are skaters who are actually taking ballet, doing dance. We don't offer that as part of our club, but they have the opportunity to do that as well. So they develop that part on their own. Plus, as we're choreographing their programs, we're also mindful of that. There are several requirements that have to happen when you are putting your program out there. Your skating skills, your interpretation of the music, and that's where all that expression of body and face language happens.
And we're speaking with Darlene Lewis, and Darlene, you're a skating coach.
Yes.
Does that mean you're also a choreographer?
I choreograph at the lower levels, and uh-huh. then once the skaters get a little higher, I send them to a choreographer.
Okay.
We have one at our rink. I've also worked with choreographers in Omaha and Minnesota.
And do the skaters collaborate in the choreography?
They do some. It depends. Some skaters have that ability more than others, and if they can, they do. Mm-hmm. But there are so many requirements that you have to meet for each skating program mm-hmm. that it really has to come from the mind of someone who's a little bit more experienced in doing that.
Okay, so let's take it down a notch for a minute.
Yes.
A lot of people skate just for pleasure.
Yes.
Right? And one of the things that Greta mentioned was that with the temperatures changing these days, people have less opportunity to skate outside as they used to. I grew
right.
up in Ames skating on Lake Laverne.
Yes.
And you don't see that as much as anymore. Has that really altered the sport the way winter has changed?
You know, I don't know that it's altered the sport that much because we have rinks like the Ames ISU Ice Arena open, you know, 12 months a year. We have down in Des Moines, Brenton Skating Plaza, which is an outdoor rink, but the ice is kept cold by chillers mm-hmm. and has a Zamboni. So people still have that opportunity. I don't think it affects the sport of figure skating or the fun of the recreation part of it.
Mm-hmm. The Zamboni.
Yes.
What's the Zamboni?
The Zamboni cleans the ice.
Cleans the ice.
It scrapes the ice, cleans the ice, makes it all nice and glistening so we can see those figures that are being created on the ice.
And the Zamboni is one of the most loved machines in the world, I think.
Yes.
People love the Zamboni.
I mean, the eyes of kids when they're looking at that Zamboni running. And everybody wants to be a part of that Zamboni. You know, at hockey games, part of the half ice time is people who have won a ride on the Zamboni. It's a big deal.
And speaking of hockey, tell us a little bit about hockey in the area.
Yeah, well, there's certainly hockey in Ames.
There's hockey leagues?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, both youth leagues and, you know, obviously the ISU team. And that's a really popular sport and a growing sport amongst girls, actually.
So for somebody who might be interested in skating with the Iowa Ames mm-hmm. Figure Skating Club, How do you get involved?
Get started with Learn to Skate. We offer Learn to Skate 3 times a week on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. That's a group lesson, so you can learn all of the basic skills of skating. And then if you want to take it farther or learn more, you can have private coaching. We do offer that. And if you want to take it even further than that, of course, you're doing the private coaching. But you're actually getting on track, taking tests that are provided by United States Figure Skating to advance your skills.
And you have ice skating camps in the summer?
We do. Mm-hmm. We have a wonderful camp. I think it's one of the best camps in the Midwest.
And when is that?
It starts in June. So it's June and July and maybe even part of August now. Uh-huh. And it's an hour and a half of on-ice experience plus off-ice experience per day.
And then you have a show in
spring?
Yes,
we do. We have one coming up. Very excited about that one.
And what happens
during
the show?
It's called Skate the Big Apple. We do themes, and during that, the skaters in the club plus our learned skaters are involved. And the Skate the Big Apple obviously is about songs all about New York, what's happening there. And then we have a theater production, which is going to be fantastic, Beauty and the Beast. It's lights, it's everything, so it's really putting on a show. It's a big deal.
And where does that happen?
That's going to be at the Ames ISU Ice Arena, I think the first weekend in May.
Okay. First weekend in May.
Yes.
Okay, very exciting. Well, we're speaking with Darlene Lewis, ice skating coach with the Ames Figure Skating Club. And before we go, just two technical questions about the art and craft of figure mm-hmm. skating. Why is the figure eight so important?
As far as
learning
to
skate.
Because you can learn all of your edges just by using the figure eight. And there are eight of them, forward, backward, left foot, right foot. So it teaches you that skill of being able to use your edges, the inside edges and the outside edges.
And what is an edge?
The edge is the part of the blade. You've got part of the blade is an inside, so you're leaning to the inside of the circle that you're skating or to the outside of the circle you're skating, which is always an interesting concept. I think it was Scott Hamilton who said, show me a skater who skates on an outside edge and I'll show you a champion.
Wow.
If you can lean that far and not be afraid of falling, you're going to be a pretty good skater.
So the art of skating has to do with your ability to lean on the edges of the skate.
Yes.
It's not a flat surface.
Not at all.
It's a surface
it's
you negotiate.
How to manage imbalance
on the edges
yes.
of the skate, because that's where your speed and your momentum are.
Exactly.
Okay, and the last question that everybody always wonders, how do you learn not to get dizzy?
Some people never do. It's really about the art of managing what happens after you get dizzy. But some of the things that can help you is to immediately focus on something when you come out of a spin. Because your eyes are moving still with the spin. So if you can focus on something, you can make that dizziness a little more manageable. The other thing is to turn the other direction from your spin, and you can manage it a little bit that way. But some skaters, they never get over it. They just learn how to skate through it.
It's
it
incredible.
Feels like skating blind.
What do you mean?
It feels like you don't know where you are. You really can't see anything. I mean, uh-huh. It used to happen to me, so you just have to know what to do next as far as skating and know that you're doing it okay until you can finally see again.
Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah.
It's a form of flying.
It is.
Yeah. So obviously, for those of you who can't see Darlene, her eyes are sparkling as she speaks about this. So obviously this is something that's a lot of fun.
It's a fantastic sport, mm-hmm. Just for the challenge of it and what it teaches you about life.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming in. I'm speaking with Darlene Lewis with the Ames Figure Skating Club. And just tell us one more time about how someone can get involved.
Well, you can check online with the Ames Figure Skating Club. And I'm sorry, I don't even know the website.
That's right.
That.
We'll put a link to the website
thank
on
you.
Our webpage.
And you'll find all you need to know how to get involved with the Learn to Skate program.
Okay, excellent. And this is something you can do all year round because it's in an indoor rink.
Yes.
And will we have an Olympic champion someday coming out of Ames?
There is always that hope.
Okay, well, keep at it.
Yes.
We're counting on you to produce that. Thank you so much for
Thank
joining
you.
Us.
All right. And I, yesterday, Ursula, wanted to go over to the community gallery at the Octagon Arts Center. I knew that they had an exhibit going up, and I caught it in its early stages while it was still packed away in the back room. I found the exhibits manager, Naomi Friend, up on a ladder drilling holes in the ceiling. so that she could hang another cord. There were already lots of long cords dangling down from the ceiling. She and the Octagon director, Heather Johnson, were preparing for the exhibit that opens to the public tomorrow, Saturday. And this exhibit is going to feature termospheres.
Okay. Termospheres.
Termospheres. What's a termosphere, you might ask? It is a sphere about 1 or 2 feet in diameter that has been painted by an artist named Dick Termos.
Oh.
Okay. So Heather Johnson, who's the director, took me back to the room where the termospheres were being stored.
So these are the spheres.
Wow. That one's so interesting because, I mean, the Renaissance was so affected by perspective.
Yeah, let me switch this one. So you can see he did Shakespeare's portrait and some of his other characters.
And it just looks like it's so amazing because the Globe Theater, this is a globe.
Exactly. You got it. You got it.
And you see all the people standing in the balconies looking at... Yeah. And about how high will they be hung?
These will be hung about 4 feet from the ground so people can see the entire surface of the globes.
From the top and the bottom.
From the top and the bottom, correct.
So this will be a bit of an exercise for some of us to stand on our tiptoes or crouch down below.
I'm sure we'll find some people who will be laying on the floors just to see the underneath detail. So this will be just a great show to see from all angles, yeah.
Okay, so I got my first glimpse, and then I went back out into the gallery where Naomi was, and it's just going to be a very exciting exhibit with these globes, again, 1 to 2 feet in diameter, being hung from the ceiling at about 4 feet high. So you go in, and you can see the top and the bottom of the sphere, and so Naomi's going to be out there. We'll be able to see her through the plate glass window hanging that all day today, and it'll open for the public tomorrow. So she took a little time out from her work to tell me more about the artist and his work.
It's an exhibit by Dick Termos, who is a South Dakota artist. He's in his 70s now, and he's been doing art for 40-plus years. So his work is exciting or notable because it's painting on spheres. And it's realistic images. A lot of them are like you're in the space, like three-dimensional. And he calls that six-point perspective, which is what he's known for.
Six-point perspective. Do you know anything more about that to describe it?
Yeah, well, I'm not an expert, obviously, but he has a whole series of images. He actually wrote a book about six-point perspective, and I have the entire book on poster board in the exhibit. So you can go through and read how he does it. But basically, one-point perspective is one vanishing point, so one point in the distance that everything converges towards. And two-point is 2 points, and the things kind of, the lines cross, and then that area in the middle is how you build the image. Three-point, you add like a triangle, so 1, 2, 3. Four is 4 points, like a square. And then 6 points, when you get all the way up to 6, you have 3 dimensions. So he paints on spheres because it's the only way to really show all those 6 points.
It's fascinating and very unique, too. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this.
Yeah, he's been published in magazines, newspapers, internet sites have referenced him because it's a fairly unique approach. I don't think anyone else is doing this. And he's known worldwide for this approach. So it is really unique. Actually, he told me that PBS is doing a segment right now. They're filming in his studio, and he's going to be basically doing these instruction-based shows about how to do drawing and six-point perspective, too, I think. So,
and some of these spheres have not yet been unpacked. You haven't yet got them up. But what do you know about the subject matter that he likes to pursue?
Some of them are very representational. So I'm looking right here at the Globe Theater, and that's very realistic. It looks like you're inside the Globe Theater. And then some of them are more landscape-based. So there's one of the Badlands in South Dakota where he works, and it's very bright color, just like the Badlands. But it's in on the sphere, so it's like you can walk around it and see a 360-degree view. And then some of them are more geometric and abstract, so he'll play with doing a more theory-based approach of how you do the drawing rather than trying to represent a real space in the world. And those are also really fun. So he's got a lot of variety.
I have to say it's kind of trippy because you're looking, normally you would think about 360 degrees from your perspective as you're being inside of a sphere. And in his case, he's drawing the outside of a sphere.
Yeah, that's true. And it's I like that you call it trippy because the most confusing ones, he actually has some that are on a clear sphere and you can see right through them. So not only do you see the surface on the front and the back, but you can imagine the space in the middle. So it's all very confusing and fun to look at.
Wow. And the artist will not be here at the beginning of his show, but he is coming to Ames in February. Is that correct?
Right. So the show closes on the 13th. It'll be down at that time. But on the 12th, he's giving a lecture at the Kamansky Auditorium in the College of Design at 7 p.m. So he's going to be talking about some of his theory and how he does his work and how his work is relevant in the wider world of art. So how it plays into architecture. He's done children's education. He's done all sorts of different things. So I'm really looking forward to that lecture. It's going to be fun.
And there will also be a wine and crackers event on January 29th.
Right. So that'll be in conjunction with our opening for clay, fiber, paper, glass, metal, wood, which is our annual all-media show. We have people who have entered from all over the United States. So we have people from California. We've had entries from Texas and the East Coast as well. So that's going to be a really exciting opening. And at the same time, we'll have an event downstairs to open Dick Term's exhibit.
Anything else we should know about this artist and his unique approach?
You can look on his website, which is termospheres.com, and you can see some of the images of his work there, although it's more fun in person, of course. And you can see maybe where he's exhibited before and the many different lectures and workshops that he's given. So that's worth looking into. He has a couple of videos on his website in addition to that.
So you can see him at work in those.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Tell us your gallery hours.
We're open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5:30 for the community gallery. On Saturday from 10 to 5.
Okay. So from 10 to 5 on Saturday, you can get your first glimpse of these termospheres. I'm sure you'll be back once you come for the first time.
It's definitely worth a second look.
Thank you so much, Naomi Friend, Exhibits Manager, Octagon Art Center.
Thank you, Greta.
And once again, that exhibit will be up from tomorrow, January 9th to February 13th. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Greta Anderson and Ursula Rudenberg. We started the show with a conversation with Clark Ford, who wrote the musical 2016, The Musical, One Family, opening later this month, and the team of Robbie Crochelle and Ben Salzberger, who wrote A Slice of Reggie, which debuts this weekend on South Dayton. Amazing to think that we have so much talent and ambition here in our community. We then spoke with Darlene Lewis of Ames Figure Skating Club. Finally, we took a look at a termosphere going up today at Octagon Arts Center Community Gallery, thanks to Heather Johnson and Naomi Friend for giving us a sneak preview.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. today. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online on our website, khoifm.org. And there you'll find information about our guests along with any relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your newsfeed. Thank you to webmaster Ron Carson for making this all possible.
Local Talk was engineered by Jonah DeGeest. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. other music you heard was 76 Trombones from that musical set in River City, Iowa, The Music Man.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. And if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or through our website at khoifm.org.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.